Alright, time for another DraftPhysics.com video presentation. Not much to talk about, frankly, so might be a short video. Read a couple of comments, see if they inspire anything to say, really. So this one says, your opening statement. So this is the video last on YouTube, I believe, yes. Regarding another person not needing a white coat. So this just has to go to Stephen Breaux's metaphor for the need or the not need for somebody to be a professional. Okay, that science can only be done by professionals. And clearly, yeah, it's kind of it tends to be true rather than it's a rule or a law or there are no exceptions. So you could argue that, you know, 90%, 99.9999999, well, 100% of the flat earthers distort evidence. Okay, they take it and view it in a specific way, and they know they're being deceptive, they know they're being dishonest, because they know that, yes, the image was taken in a certain circumstance where, you know, it was really humid and blah, blah, blah. They know it was a distorted image. You could say all of the debunking of the Apollo missions and the moon landing, you know, all of those arguments, you know, they take a picture from inside of a picture, you know, like a reflection off of a backpack, and they know it's a 300 by 600 resolution image, and we know NASA didn't bother taking images that small. So we, you know, they know they crop the image, you know, to make it look like something because it was a reflection in a backpack and blah, 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 blah. You know, real cheats. And 99% of the dissidents involve themselves in those kind of cheats. So we call those the amateurs. So it's a real problem. But as I pointed out in my videos, is that you can also find Professor Lewin, you know, professional physicist cheating, okay? A blob of putty on an air track cart shouldn't really be there. No logic to defend it being there. And all of the evidence kind of points to it's there to create an experiment that he's not really doing. Like he's describing, I'm doing one kind of experiment, and now he's doing a completely different experiment because the results of the real experiment don't match the mathematics. And I could argue that there's a few of those out there. Air track experiments not done. Well, they'll do it, and then they'll show you the results of what they want it to be. Now, didn't come out quite the way they intended, kind of thing. You do wonder that in some of them, they're classroom-type settings. They got multiple air tracks. I wonder what they tell the students when the students do the experiment and they don't get the right answer. I wonder. But anyway, so it's not, this isn't the main subject of this channel, is a debate about whether, who's more dishonest, the professionals or the amateurs. I just say that there's a tendency that the amateurs haven't had it beat into their head, okay? They have nothing to lose by being found out to be cheats. It's not like they're going to lose their professional, their unprofessional credentials. Where you'd say that the people who get some scrutiny, the high-paid performance artists, have to do their cheating very carefully. You could almost just say that. But who cares? Okay, I wasn't making a hard statement one way or the other. I was just pointing out that in this conversation, Stephen Breaux saying, look, I can do all these experiments. Well, the fact is he can't do them competently. And then he lies about it, okay? So first off, he does a bunch of experiments where he gets various results. You know, they aren't consistent. And then he says they're all consistent and everything's just fine. Oh, I've proven. He titles his videos, I'm proving, okay? That kind of nonsense. And yet there's, you know, the evidence doesn't meet what he's how he's describing it. And then he overtly, in one case, gets completely the wrong answer and then claims it's the right answer. I mean, you can't get more egregious a trespass against the truth. So, clearly, I was just using the word white coat as a metaphor for having something called integrity. Okay, it's not about wearing a white coat. It's about having some understanding of your obligation to be honest first. First, like, that's a minor one. You know, it seems like that should be oh, yeah, everybody understands scientists shouldn't be lying. You know, and then you have to have some sort of competence in terms of you have to realize that there's angular momentum when you're rolling things. And then you have to, you know, there's lots of details when you're doing an experiment that you have to account for. You have to push something rather than hit something. These are all little bits, you know, and the masses have to be, something has to be heavier than something to receive its energy. All kinds of bits of information that you have to be aware of and you have to be careful. That's it. You have to be careful. So the coat represents being careful. Okay? It doesn't mean that anybody wearing a white coat is honest or careful. It just means that these are the things you're looking for, and there is no, unfortunately, we don't have a white coat for integrity. There's no badge of integrity. There's no standard of integrity. There's no seal of approval, housekeeping seal of approval. We don't have any of those seals of approval. So everybody has to be judged based on what they do and say. I don't think that's what you've done here, okay? Because I didn't say anything outrageous. Okay, let's see. Do not need a white coat to enlighten the rest of society. So this isn't what is going on here, is it? I mean, we're talking about doing science. I don't think enlightening the rest of society is a great way to say doing science, but whatever. You go on to say, I guess you do. Yes, I was just pointing out how, well, you know, as much as Stephen Breaux says you don't need any of these professional credentials, it seems clear he's demonstrating just so obviously that, well, you need something because what you're doing is obviously wrong. Okay, no integrity, no honesty, and filthy experiments. That's not working, okay? All right. Inferring without a white coat, you have no integrity. Well, that's exactly the point. Should there be an association between these things? I'm saying there's probably a stronger association between a white coat and integrity than there is without it, because obviously Stephen's not being held by any standard. His little group of sycophants are all saying, great job, Steve, when he proves nothing. So, you know, when his evidence is a lie, I mean, it's just lying. There's no other word for it. He's showing no integrity. So, you know. Truth, and you propagandize for facts. You'll propagandize for facts that aren't real. Well, that's I'm making the direct accusation. You're going to counter it. I mean, his experiment overtly came up with a wrong answer, and he claims it's the right answer. I mean, what do you call that? Your initial statements denigrates not just yourself, but every free-thinking individual. I would say that your little fake name and your little anonymous trolley behavior, let's just say unaccountable. Who the fuck are you, first off? We don't see any other comment but this from you, right? I mean, you could at least, like, maybe put up a video that has links to all the comments you've made on other videos. You know, some kind of reference, some sort of way to judge who the fuck you are and what the fuck you defend. But you provide nothing, because you're a coward and you're the propagandist and you're a troll. Because clearly I didn't argue anything in the video. I just argued that clearly there's no way to just trust dissidents either. Okay, maybe science is lying to you. Well, the dissidents aren't doing any better. So, fuck you. Yeah, we'll just delete this, but fuck you. Nothing comment, really. All right, so Peter Yankovitz, now that's just the Farley troll. So another faker, another phony, is going to, you know, imply that somebody else doesn't have integrity or isn't being honest or isn't doing any fact-checking or any of that kind of crap. So just understand your sources. These are people overtly in the process of propagandized lying, distorting perspective. They're not trying to enlighten or reveal the truth or fight in the truth war on the right side. They're clearly just dishonest tactics. Okay, and so to say something this stupid, you know, it's just like, okay, so this is just a question asked to imply. What's the implication? Where's your real-life demonstration that a lever can break conservation of energy? So clearly, I'm the one claiming it doesn't break conservation of energy because I think energy is momentum, and levers conserve momentum. You're the one who has to explain how does it create different amounts of energy on a balanced scale. How is that possible? How is it possible for 200 joules to behave just like 100 joules on a scale? You're the one violating conservation of energy in this form of momentum. You're saying conservation of momentum is somehow not real, and that one side of the lever has more energy on it than the other side. What videos and evidence do you present? So what videos and evidence have you presented to show that you actually collect the extra or that you actually show that you lose? So one way the lever loses half the energy, the other way it increases the energy. I shouldn't keep saying half, because I can put a one-third object three notches further out. I can put a one-fourth object four notches out, make four times as much energy, 400% return, or a 400% or a four times degrade in the energy. So I can lose three out of four bits of energy, or I can gain three out of four. You're the one that thinks the lever does this. You say it overtly. You say it's so well proven, and yet you've provided not a single video explaining how it's been proven anywhere, where you actually collected the energy, just like you haven't shown a video where it takes four times more fuel to go twice as fast, or eight times as much fuel, to go four times as fast, or any of those multiples. You haven't shown any videos or any references to any evidence demonstrating it to be true. So again, I'll say fuck you louder this time. All right, so we'll go to one comment I overlooked on the other thing, and then we'll maybe just call it a simple video. I'll be back. All right, I'm back. All right, so this little comment here. What's harder, to throw 10 balls at 20 miles an hour or one ball at 200? So it's kind of unrealistic. We know that humans can only throw about 100 miles an hour, so no point in making it 200 miles an hour, because then I need an extension, right? I need an extension on the lever that is my arm, so I can make my arm twice as long by holding one of those pilot things, right? And I could throw the ball maybe 200 miles an hour. I can have the ball, I can take advantage of the lever, and have the ball further out on the lever and be able to throw it further. But let's just cut it to a baseball and let's just make it 100 miles an hour. So what's harder, throwing the whole baseball 100 miles an hour, or let's say we could break the baseball into 10 pieces and throwing any one of the pieces 10 miles an hour, right? So I throw 10 little pieces of the baseball 10 miles an hour, or I throw the whole baseball 100 miles an hour. I'm arguing that, yes, it's exactly the same energy, and you could prove it in space, because we already, the definition of energy in space, okay, is pretty clear in terms of what thrust will move a spaceship. And it just has to do with how much mass is moving what velocity. So if I throw the 10 pieces of a baseball out one side of the ship at 10 miles an hour each, or I throw a whole baseball 100 miles an hour? Okay, wait a minute. There's something wrong with that equation, just because now I have the 10 pieces are all going 100 miles an hour. So that's clearly not the same equivalency. So we have to change the thought experiment. So yes, you're throwing a much slower velocity. So the 10 at the much slower velocity, I'll have to pause and think about it. Oh yeah, my mistake is cutting the ball into pieces because it's a smaller mass. So 10 baseballs, if I have a spaceship and I take 10 baseballs on one side of the ship and I have only one baseball on the other side, and I shoot the one baseball at 100 miles an hour and then I shoot the other 10, okay, at just 10 miles an hour out the other side. It's just about the mass and it's just about the velocity. So thrust is determined by how much mass and how much velocity. There's no V squared, okay? It doesn't work in space. So you can't No. So the answer to the question is yes, it's the same amount of energy to create the outcome. It's the same energy to, you know, the recoil of the gun is the same energy as the bullet shooting out the other end. And that's, you know, Newton's third law. Now, the way Newton's third law is written, I don't think is great, because it's not necessarily a reactive force that causes the equal and opposite. The equal and opposite is created by the fact that if I have $100 and I give somebody 50, I only have $50. There's no force that makes me poor. What makes me poor is giving away the money. But in a lot of cases, energy is created. Okay, let's say if we're going to argue about an event that's most elemental in terms of how energy gets into the universe, that does something that makes it visible again. It's usually because atoms expand and contract. It's little explosions, essentially. So where explosions are kind of obviously, there's this the same amount going this way as there is that way, and the same amount going that way as there is this way. So explosions are very third law compliant. But in the other circumstances, what you're really doing is giving away your energy. So in the circumstance of friction, there isn't some friction force that acts on me. It's just the fact that if I knock something over with my momentum, if I interact with it and I move it, it has my energy. So you could think of the bowling ball. I've made this analogy. Yes, you're rolling it down an alley and you're going to hit pins. But what you have to think about is what you're first going to do is hit little pins in the floor of the alley. So depending on how well waxed it is and all this other stuff. But let's just say an unwaxed bowling alley, and you roll the ball. What's going to happen is the ball is basically going to hit little pins in the wood. Okay, it's going to hit pieces of the wood, and it's going to make them move, and it's going to cause you to lose some of your momentum before you even get to the pins. So before you get to the pins to give them your energy, you're going to give away your energy to little pins in the floor, so to speak. So it's not like there was an opposite force that acted on you. The force is you gave away your energy, and once you gave it away, you don't have it anymore. You're poorer. So the simple answer to the question is they're equivalent? And you don't have a single piece of experimental evidence showing that they're not equivalent. So what you have to do is show somewhere where they did an experiment and collected the energy. So show the experiment where they plowed a 10-ton train, so to speak, going 5 miles an hour, and the 5-ton train going 10 miles an hour, and show the experiment where they produce different amounts of energy, where they move different amounts of atoms in total. So we're not talking about circumstantially. Sometimes it's, you know, if you're crashing into a brick wall or, you know, different circumstances where the mass might matter or the velocity might matter. We're talking about the total energy, so the total amount of deformation and heat and all of those things show that the 5-ton train going 10 miles an hour somehow has twice as much capacity to move stuff in the universe as the 10-ton train going 5 miles an hour. That's the evidence you don't have. In 300 years of your theory, you haven't compiled any experimental evidence. 300 years you've had a theory, and you haven't compiled any evidence. Well, the first 100 years, you can't count any of your evidence because you declared it all crap when you stuck the 1/2 in front of it. So when you put the 1/2 in front of it, you said all the experiments that proved mv squared are now rubbish because we have a new theory that's only half that much. So now we have to have experiments that demonstrate the 1/2 mv squared. So first off, you didn't have too many experiments showing this mv squared thing. You know, they're all rigged experiments, sand and clay. And then when you put the 1/2 in front of it, you destroyed the credibility of that evidence, and you didn't replace it with any new evidence. So you have no experimental evidence demonstrating your theory to be true, and yet you're asserting as almost in a mocking fashion that, what, am I crazy for not accepting your theory? No, I'm not crazy, okay? I mean, it's not crazy for somebody to reject a theory you haven't demonstrated with any evidence. That's being sane and rational and reasonable. So until you can create some evidence, find some evidence, why should any reasonable person believe you? Why should we believe the complex answer when the simple answer works? And frankly, the simple answer works in space, which is the important place. because that's the place where you're doing a really clean experiment. You don't have any crap in your way. So in space, all that matters is how much mass, how many bits, electrons and protons, how many atoms are moving what speed. And that's all that matters. And there's no squaring and there's no halving and there's no bullshit. And so until you get past that argument, you don't have an argument. You're just a dupe, a silly person, frankly. It's almost worse than religion. I mean, there's some theory, in religions, there's some theory that it's the way God is testing you, and there's some, there's something to make sense of it. All right, it doesn't make much sense, but I'm just saying, you have nothing. I mean, there's not even a heaven or a hell. There's no purpose in your fanaticism for a theory that has no evidence. Zero evidence. Nothing. Nothing. I can't show your argument because you don't have one. I mean, I'd like to show your evidence, but I can't show it because it doesn't exist. You don't have any. All right. I'll pause and see if there's anything else, but what's the point? You have to argue the argument, and there's no rational counter argument. All right, back. All right, so we're sort of just waiting on the Stephen Brozo. It's probably a waste of time, but it's all that's out there. So we have some hope that somebody's going to do an air track experiment where it's going to be as observable as possible, in terms of we can see the elements and be assured that there's no shenanigans and all of that kind of crap. And it's just really dirt simple experiments. I mean, the fact that we don't have any, I mean, there's lots of ways to do the experiment, but I mean, it's a pretty simple experiment. We're just asking to take a spring, and you have the same compression of the spring. You compress it exactly the same way for two objects, and you just launch them. And so you just take a one mass and a two mass, all right, and you propel them with the same force, the same amount of spring compression, which is a pounds of energy compressing the spring, and you just release them and push them with the same energy, and you just see if this comes out to be one half the velocity of this. Okay, which it should turn out that way. That's the way it should turn out. By momentum. So if momentum is the only thing involved, that's what you should get. And the likewise on the receiving end, you take two objects with inverse mass to velocity ratios, 10 ton train going 5 miles and 10 miles an hour versus 10 ton going 5, and you just plow them into a spring. Do they compress the spring the same amount, or is there some trick where the spring can recognize the difference in the weights of these objects, even though they weigh the same, the lever says so, that somehow the lighter one will compress the spring more. So I'll put the lighter one down here, well, whatever, that there'll be a difference. So we don't have that experiment. I mean, Brozo did one version of it and came up with a result where, the same compression is here, the 1.4 is here, and he got this as an answer. So really a useless result. So we're waiting for the better air track with that experiment. And then there's the Professor Lewin experiment where you take the one mass and you collide it into the two mass. And then you see if the two mass leaves with 2/3 the momentum, that some 2/3 the velocity, which would be a 1/3 increase in the momentum. So it goes in, this goes in with 100, this leaves with 130. That's not writing very well. Oh, might be at the end of this crayon also. 130 this way and 30 back this way. So you get a total of 160. So you go in with 100, you get out 160 in momentum. And the argument would be, as Galileo would say, that can't happen. Newton would say that can't happen. Descartes would say that can't happen. They say it does happen, and yet you know, we don't have any really good evidence demonstrating that it does happen. So we're just sort of waiting on that. And these answers will kind of end the argument, right? In a sense that the critics will have to concede that if it's the same compression a spring creates this relationship in terms of velocity, then, you know, it's a substantial blow to the 1/2 mv² theory, indicating that the mv was the only part that was ever right. That was the truth. And this crap is just that crap added to the truth to try to make it into something. Like somehow, okay, yes, there's evolution. And then they said, but we're the spawn of alien DNA from another planet. You know, and that's what this two is. You know, and this thing over here is, let's see what other wacky theory they come up with, you know, to ruin evolution. Yeah, that somehow you can improve your genetics by having happy thoughts. No, you can't do that. You can make better eggs that way. No, you can't. So, you know, this is just rubbish, daydreaming, wishful thinking. You know, these are just fairies. You know, this is the fairy godmother, and this is whatever that Pinocchio fairy was. Yeah, forget it. Or the... you know, the Witch of the North and the Wizard of Oz. It doesn't have, no, there are no leprechauns. There's no gremlins. This is it. MV. That's energy in the universe. All right. So, until we have some more evidence to argue, we don't have much to argue. So, we'll have to wait till there's more evidence to argue. And such. So, till the next time, and such. Yeah, that's not much can be done. So, this has been a DraftPhysics.com video presentation. Blah, 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 blah. Till there's somebody else blah, blahing in some sort of rational counter form. And so far, no luck finding an honest participant in the conversation. No luck at all.